Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 Podcast. I'm Zach Babo. Today we are looking ahead to the playoffs. We talk with Susquehanna coach Stuart Moon, who serves as the Southern Chair on the NCAA Selection Committee in 2014. Coach Moon talks about the makeup of the committee, any new wrinkles of the structure and format of this year's tournament, what goes into selecting teams from pools B and C, and how the committee attempts to structure the best bracket possible while weighing several logistical concerns. This podcast will appear both in our iTunes feed and as part of a larger D3 bracketology post that will be updated again on Sunday as we get closer to the announcement of the Division 3 field and many of the Pool A automatic qualifiers wrap up. For more info on the task ahead for the selection committee, check out last year's D3 playoff podcast interview with Lynchburg's coach Steve Kadelka, who served as the selection committee in 2013. That podcast will also be embedded in the bracketology post. Keep checking InsideLacrosse.com all weekend for scores and updates from many of the conference tournaments being played out across the Division III landscape. Read up on many of these races in Ken Stockman's most recent D3 notebook, also found linked to in the Bracketology post. Make sure to come back to InsideLacrosse.com Sunday afternoon and evening as we update you on the conference races, make some guesses as to who will make up the Pool B and C bids, and take you right on through the NCAA selection announcement. As always, stay with Inside Lacrosse right through the playoffs and enjoy the convenience of our new mobile-friendly website. Follow me at Twitter at Zach Babo. That's at ZACHBABO, no spaces. And follow Inside Lacrosse at Inside_Lacrosse. Okay, let's get to my conversation with Susquehanna coach Stuart Moon. Okay, the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast is now joined by Susquehanna head coach Stuart Moon, who also serves as the Southern Chair on the NCAA Selection Committee in 2014. Coach, I guess for starters, what year is this involved in the committee for you?
This will be my fifth year on the committee.
And I guess your first year as chair?
Rob Randall from Nazareth is the chair of the committee.
Okay.
He's the national chair. We have two committee members from the north, and Rob is chairing this year. And then we'll have two committee members from the south. This year, and then I'll move into the chair position for the national chair next year.
Okay. And who makes up the committee, I guess, beyond you and Coach Randall this year?
Sean Cork from Endicott up in Massachusetts, and Jake Gardner, who is the commissioner of the Southern Conference.
Okay.
So it's three coaches and one athletic director, administrator.
And it sounds like you guys kind of make a point of having a fairly diverse geography almost in there to maybe account for the now fairly large geographic span of Division III.
Correct. That's what we try to do, to have regional representation. So that's why there's always two from the north and two from the south. And then everyone rotates off one at a time. Jay replaced Steve, so it's his first year, so he'll be groomed for his fourth, 4 years from now, he'll be the chair. So there's a rotating basis you work up, so you have the most experienced person, finishing your last year as a chair. So it's done very systematically, and it makes sense because they want to have someone to have that experience when you become the chair to lead the national committee.
Okay. So, Coach, for starters, I guess it seems every year there's a little bit of flexibility within the tournament in terms of maybe how many teams make the field and how the bids break down between pools A, B, and C. Can you tell me about some of the changes this year for the tournament in terms of how large the field is and how the bids break down from each pool?
Well, I'm not sure if we'd call flexibility. I do think there is a change every year, and it's all done. It's all done mathematically. It all depends on sponsorship. When you have more teams come in, conference representation, and it's all done from a math. So everyone has an equal opportunity, a mathematical opportunity to have an NCAA experience. So. But this year's pool, this year's breakdowns, and it's always breakdown in three pools. There's a pool A, which is considered automatic qualifiers, an AQ pool. This, and that's done by how many conferences who sponsor, who meet the regulations from the NCAA to be an NCAA-sponsored conference. This year we have 20 teams that have qualified for that, and each conference gets an automatic qualifier bid. Then there is Pool B, which would be independents that were teams that are not in a conference, and they have the same mathematical ratio as the teams that do have conferences. And so that's how you decide how many Pool B bids will be based on membership and equal opportunity. And then there is a Pool C, and this year it will be 5 as well. And that will be at-large bids. That will be bids, say, for example, a team that came in second place in their conference, freelance sort of thing like that. An at-large bid, there will be 5 at-large bids that could be our third-place team, depending on if you play in a real strong conference. That's how the bids are broken down. And then the pool Cs will be how many are left after you mathematically figure out how many teams are playing in the country, broken down by the ratio that the NCAA has established that year. You know, maybe 6.5 to 1 or something, whatever that is. So everyone in every opt has equal opportunity to make either independent or as an AQ. And then what's left over is divvied up into at-large bids. This year is 5, so we will have this year will be a total of 30 teams will be selected. 25 and 5.
So
does that make sense?
Yeah. So last year was a 29 team field, but it was the same 5 Pool B, 5 Pool C. So really, more or less, it's a similar field size to last year, other than an additional AQ being added. It sounds like.
Correct. And sometimes in some years, say 6 or 7 schools that are independent form a conference, and so next year they would be a Pool A, and they would receive an AQ, and then there'd be an extra Pool A for that conference, that new established conference, and do one less Pool B because you would take those 7 schools out of the equation. So it still would be mathematically the same, that even though they'd be coming out of a different pool. So, and every year, you have some teams that are reclassifying that way, depending on their conference affiliation.
Okay.
Or if they have a conference or not.
I mean, off the top of your head, I know there's a lot of conferences that get AQs. Are there any changes in terms of schools, maybe new conferences that gained an AQ this year and a conference that maybe had an AQ last year that no longer does in 2014?
And I apologize. I don't know that off the top of my head. I think we added a new – I think there was a new conference in there, and I cannot remember who it is. And how does it work when your team does – when you have a new formed conference, you have a 2-year probationary period before you receive your AQ from the NCAA. So it's not – you just form a conference to get an automatic qualifier right away. You have that 2-year probationary. So you have a conference, but you would still be in the Pool B independent pool until you complete your 2-year probationary period. And then you would be – then the NCAA, you'd be petitioned to the NCAA to get an AQ. So there is some teams – and the same thing if all of a sudden the NCAA, and, sorry, bigger picture in Division I and other programs that nowadays teams are jumping conferences and moving around. So if you would have some teams leave a conference to join another conference and they fell below – the minimum required the NCAA would need for you to continue to hold your conference affiliation and an opportunity to hold and still receive an AQ, an automatic qualifier, that would be taken away from you if you did not meet the minimum requirements.
Okay.
So that's the movement you're talking about, but it still would be the same amount of opportunities to get in the NCAA. It would just be those teams would maybe flow to the independent pool, and then maybe independent pool would maybe increase depending on the total number of teams divided by the ratio.
Okay. So obviously the Pool A field is fairly straightforward. You win a conference IQ, you get the bid. Pool B and Pool C, other than the criteria of what makes the schools, you know, a Pool B or a Pool C participant, in terms of being selected out of those pools, it seems kind of similar in terms of maybe what kind of a resume you'd need to put forward to garner that Pool B or Pool C selection. I guess maybe looking at Pool B first, you know, what are some of the kind of resume or selection criteria that would push a team towards one of those five Pool B bids?
Well, those criteria that the NCAA will establish, the big ones are, you know, win-loss record, your winning percentage would be a primary criteria, strength of schedule, primary criteria. And then you go in more depth, opponents, strength of schedule. So again, a lot of math involved and certain for us to see things clearly and, to try to give everyone that best opportunity. So there's not a group of people who are just saying, hey, I think that team's good. You know, it's done very thoroughly and very professionally with some mathematical guidelines as well just to help you see. And so we spend a lot of time as a committee making sure we meet those particular criteria. There's primary criteria, and then if you have to dig deeper, trying to find the difference between two teams, and there's a group of secondary criteria as well.
Often you hear for the Division I field that a particular metric may be given more weight or kind of primary consideration to kind of make it maybe a more straightforward, you know, kind of you can see what you're judging all the teams against. Do you guys try and pull out a certain kind of metric or two like that in the Pool B or Pool C to try and make it a very clearly delineated thing of going by, you know, regional record or something like that, or an RPI number or something like that to try and make a fairly decisive, you know, like this will be the first thing or the most heavily thing we weight to help remove ambiguity from some of that selection?
Well, first, I think you need to know in Division III, you don't have an RPI. And that's a Division I. They use that. I'm not really sure if Division II does, and so I don't want to speak on that at a term. But Division III, as of now, this year, we don't use that. But again, dividers and separators are, you know, in region record. There's record versus ranked opponents, region ranked opponents. I'm sure you're privy to the fact that the NCAA sends out once a week a regional ranking from the north and from the south. We do not have a national ranking. But do you have a regional ranking that is, I think, is released every Monday? Released every Wednesday, I think. So there's a regional ranking. The North regionally ranks 15 teams. The South regionally ranks 17 teams because there's, again, more teams in the South. And it's all done by, again, a mathematical ratio, so it's even. And so that is one against, you know, head-to-head competition is involved, records against ranked opponents, strength of schedule. You know, so there's many criteria that you can use to help filter through, you know, what you think. It's not just someone eyeballing. It's not just an eyeball test. It is done with a, you know, very. When I first got on this committee, and I've been so impressed all the years I've been on this committee, is how thorough this process is done. It is not done by the seat of your pants. It is not done, you know, by emotion. It's really done by in a very professional manner. That everyone is really being looked at critically, looking at all the criteria they possibly have to establish the best reasons to choose one team over the other. And it's a very impressive process, to tell you the truth, and very thorough.
obviously, the Pool A conferences are playing most of their tournaments this week and weekend, and that'll compose, you know, those 20 Pool A AQs, and then probably whomever loses those AQ bids will fall into that Pool C pile they'll have to sort out on Sunday afternoon. With most of the Pool B schools kind of wrapping up their schedules heading into this week or weekend, are you guys able to I guess in some ways, I mean, you're dealing with such a big selection process in 30 teams. Are you able, as you do kind of the weekly meetings and stuff of discussing the potential of an NCAA tournament field, able to kind of square away some stuff like the Pool B stuff maybe a little bit ahead of time so that on Sunday night you're mostly dealing with maybe a couple of loose end Pool Bs and then largely the Pool C field, or is it all essentially done Sunday when you sit down?
No, I think it's done ahead of time, and that's why we have weekly calls. We have a national ranking RAC committee comprised of, like I said, of a group of coaches. Every conference is represented, and independents are represented as well, and as every week. So we're not just sitting around on Sunday starting from scratch and trying to figure all that out in the marathon day. So it is constantly a work in progress so that we are have plenty of time to be as thorough and prepared as we possibly can when we're on the clock on Sunday and have to get those bids out by a certain time. So it is an ongoing process all the time. So we're working on that for a month, if not longer, so that we're really educated going into that meeting on Sunday. And it's not, you know, hey, let's say I'm starting from scratch and pull the paper out. So it's constantly a work in progress.
For Pool C, obviously that's where most of the intrigue lies for a lot of people kind of looking into the field. I know that the regional rankings factor largely into kind of, you know, who comes to the top in that Pool C conversation. But the Pool C isn't broken down as, you know, three from the north and two from the south or vice versa. It's the five best at-large resumes. So after kind of looking at regional rankings, how do you guys then further deduce that down of going, okay, maybe these are the top four or five teams in the north, these are the top four or five teams in the south. Now amongst that loose, you know, 8, 10, 12, whatever, you know, how do we pull the five best from that? Because like last year, you know, you had four southern teams make the Pool C and one northern team. Other years it weighs out differently. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's kind of a mixing and matching somewhat of what you have to get into to figure out whose resume, you know, rises above there.
Yes, we do, and that's where it gets fun. And I say that jokingly, but you know, it gets tricky. I mean, that's what we're working really hard to try to find the, like you said, the poise, the AQs work themselves out. They're handed to us, and that's why it's good to be in a conference. It's good to control your own destiny. You win your conference, you're in, you know, and not have to sit on pins and needles and wait. For a group to make a decision. And the Pool Bs work themselves out, like you said, as well. You're not waiting around for the last day for a conference championship game. And then maybe all of a sudden the top seeded team got upset in there, and now, you know, maybe a stronger team. So things get all kind of moved around to see, you know, who ends up being the second place team. It does change from year to year. And it's not very clean and clear and easy, because now for the first time you are comparing teams from the north and the south, because throughout the entire year they're just regionally ranked, and now we have to compare a team that came in second place from a power conference in the north versus a team that came in second place from a power conference in the south. And then you're looking maybe at second criteria, looking at common opponents. You know, you're digging deeper into their schedules and into their competition. So that is a real challenge. That is the challenge, and a real challenge. And that's where, you know, a lot of time is spent to do those things, because it's not clear. It's not easy. It's hard. So you really have to dig deep. And I have so much respect for the other three gentlemen on our committee and the sincerity in which they work and we work on to try to select the best teams given the criteria that we have from the NCAA to represent and have an opportunity to play in the NCAA National Championship Tournament.
You guys play your conference championship this evening, I believe. I mean, after you guys wrap up, are you kind of sitting around through the weekend, potentially hoping that chalk wins out on some of these conferences to make the pool C a little easier so not a lot of wrenches get thrown in as to a team falling out of their conference IQ and now suddenly they're back in the at-large field with everybody else?
Well, I know our conference championship is tomorrow on Saturday. So most people play on Saturday. Some teams play on Sunday. And we know which games we have to look at. So as a committee, we are kind of on pins and needles and waiting for the results from that conference to that conference. And again, not so much for the team at the AQ, but for the team that loses that game, you know, and where do they fit? And so, yes, we're absolutely looking. And the more information we get on Saturday, it's better than the teams play on Sunday. I know there's a couple. I think the ODAC plays a Sunday championship game. I think the NESCAC in the North plays a Sunday championship game. And now we're waiting, you know, not so much for the winner of that because they're going to be plugged in. And, you know, they're not going to make the tournament if they're AQ. But the loser of that game, where do they fit? And we can't do anything until that game's over. And then all of a sudden we're comparing them to, you know, other teams and other places and other things. I think with that as well, something you mentioned earlier is, you know, how that fluctuates sometimes. And, you know, in different years, different conferences have good years, up years, and have down years. And, you know, so it changes from year to year, and that's great. So, it isn't three for the North and two for the South. It is certainly a national thing, and so to give us the autonomy to bring in, you know, the best this year, the math told us this year, you know, the best five teams, the best of the rest to complete the field.
So I guess for now we can kind of move into a little bit of the structure, how the field breaks out. So with 30 teams this year, are there any opening round byes?
I think there'll be two opening round byes. They'll do two 14 brackets and the 15th team will get a bye. So it'll be one bye in the North and one bye in the South.
Okay. In terms of then, you know, kind of breaking out the bracket from there, when I talked to Coach Kaduka last year, one of the things that I guess I should have followed up with him a little bit on because I was caught a little off guard is, you know, you automatically assume that just the higher seeded or higher ranked team in a region gets to host the game. Coach Kaduka mentioned something about teams having their paperwork together for hosting bids or the like. Perhaps was I just confused on that, Coach, or is there something to that in terms of what dictates who winds up hosting a game in the opening rounds?
That is true. Do you have the NCAA sends out, I don't know the time table off the top of my head, but earlier in the year, whether your institution would be willing to host a site. And I think for lacrosse, it becomes a little not as easy in black and white. And usually one of the issues is graduation. So a team, you know, and some schools don't want to host. Their campuses are hotels, campus facilities, just they business. If their team makes it, and then that's the day they're graduating, they may be the higher seeded team. Maybe, and they don't know what kind of cross season they're going to have that year, but they go and are a high seeded team and would be awarded a. We would be considering to have them to have a home game because they were thought of at a higher rate to reward them for that, and then they can't go because their institution, you know, as C said, didn't put the paperwork in. I think they chose not to put the paperwork in because they didn't want to host because of, again, usually it's graduation, and you know, that makes sense. So that has happened at some times, and that's an institution decision, and so we have to make some adjustments, and so we adjust accordingly the best way we can.
Coach Kaduka last year spoke of that, of kind of, you know, the challenge of trying to make as you know, strong and keep bracket integrity and kind of, you know, as legitimate of a true kind of play down field as you can, while also balancing some of the other Division III considerations, like you try to want to avoid conference foes to play in the first or potentially second round. You want to keep games fairly geographically close because, you know, there's the 500-mile limit on bus trips and you know, with so many teams playing, you know, you have to be careful you're not suddenly having multiple long trips involved. How do you guys approach that in terms of, you know, trying to make as good and legitimate of a bracket you can while also being, you know, conscious of some of these other things that weigh in?
Yeah, I think that especially in Division III, and cost containment is certainly an issue at all Division III institutions and everything that they do, and sports as well. So, and you've hit the nail on the head that day when we're kind of on lockdown on that Sunday and trying to get this all completed before the selection show that it is twofold. One is, you know, determining the teams, this year, the 30 teams, and that's, you know, we work and fight and figure that out, and then you don't get a chance to barely take a breath, and now we say, well, now we got to do pairings, and there is some restrictions or some considerations and things like that, whether it be an opportunity to host, for, you know, who's put in to host, you know, where they are, a location, the 500-mile race at the NCAA once that's worked out, that has been approved by the, you know, the college presidents and championships committee for Division III. So things aren't, and again, I can't speak for Division I, nor should I, but I think Division I is more, you know, is more of a true bracket one plays, so, you know, the bottom top, because I'm not sure if they have, and I shouldn't speak on that, I'm not sure, but I don't think they have as, you know, as many restrictions, you know, Division I than maybe Division III does with trying to, you know, make sure your geographical fits and travel arrangements and things like that. Ours is done a little bit differently. I'm not sure about that. I'm not privy to the Division I group and what they have. But for example, I know we don't have an RPI in ours in the first criteria like that. So I know that each division does work independently and have their own and may have some own little independent rules and within their own division on how they can pair teams and how they can select teams, but. You know, all I know is Division III, you know, how we do it.
It was fairly well known for Division I for a while that, you know, they operate with similar parameters of, you know, a bus trip over X hundred miles, you know, is then considered no longer a bus trip but a flight. And then for a while it seemed that you could only have, I believe it was two flights in the opening round. And since then it sounds like the NCAA or the selection committee for D1 has relaxed that to a point where they prefer two flights, but, you know, they can kind of look into potentially more if it makes a better bracket. Do you guys have similar limits in terms of, you know, I know that it's the 500-mile limit in terms of, you know, that for a bus trip, but do you have limits in terms of, you know, you can only have two flights in the first round or things like that?
I don't think we really discussed about having a black and white limit of anything. Again, I don't want to speak for Division I. I probably should have referred to that, saying that was probably wrong on my part, because I don't know what rules they have in Division I and what, like you talked about the two-flight rule or things like that. I don't know if that's true or not, and how Division I operates or Division II operates theirs. And when we get down to selecting those things, we are on the phone with the NCAA office as well, and we have to check through all those things to make sure that they meet, again, travel criteria, but and sometimes you can't control that. You know, it depends on who makes it. You know, if a certain team makes it and they got to fly, they got to fly. You know, so we try to work with the NCAA office and we work through those things as best we possibly can. But there's no black and white absolutes. You know, this, you know, we want to have one flight, we don't want to have three flights, or, you know, we can't do that because we don't know who those teams are going to be and where they are and where they have to go. You know, so it's not, it's not that rigid. Yeah, you know, we just, that's the things we're working through. But it is something it's something that's always considered. But you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
To that end, too, you mentioned before that that the NCAA ranks 15 teams in its northern regional ranking and 17 teams in southern regional ranking. And it seems like the southern field can often feel a little bigger. And you sometimes see teams that, like, you know, a team like a Denison or a Cabrini, which currently sit at 4 and 5, respectively, in the NCAA's most recent southern regional rankings. You've sometimes seen teams like that wind up getting bumped into the northern bracket. How do you guys handle that aspect of, you know, a team that maybe has a little bit more of a flexible geography? You know, Cabrini sits in southern Pennsylvania, Denison's out in Ohio, you know, other such schools that lay along similar geographic lines. How do you maybe handle, you know, trying to slot them into the bracket somewhere where you're dealing with all the geographic constraints, you're trying to stay as true to the regionality as possible, but also want to make sure that you have a bracket that has integrity with how competitive those teams are?
And you've nailed the head. There's the balance. There's the call. There's, you know, we're trying to do all those things the best that we can. And, you know, it's even, you know, big time NCAA basketball tournament where, you know, a school from the East Coast is in the Western bracket, you know, and so, things move around, and, it's nice to have a team, you know, that can be geographically, that can be moved to the North or the South. So do we like that? Yes. That flexibility, that kind of helps you out a little bit, you know, that to help make the bracket sort of smoother. You did talk about why we have 17 and more in the South, because most of the Western teams are included into the Southern bracket of the ranking, as you mentioned, Denison or a team like that. But every year, depending on when you start going through this, after you get through the and even including the AQs, the 20 there, there's teams that can be, you know, a team that may be in the NCAA 2 years in a row, and 1 year they could be in a north bracket playing their way through that, and 1 year they could be playing a south bracket, depending on the field, depending on what teams they are. They're, you know, again, on any given year, maybe the north is a little stronger and have some more teams. Maybe they have more than, except we are doing 15 and 15, north and south, but maybe if there's 20 real good north teams, or that said 15, then the other one's got to move down south. You know, and who that would be is, again, part of things we try to figure out. Next year there could be some more teams in the south, and so a southern team have to move up to the north because of, again, just the strength of that year and the strength of those teams. So it's not just pretty and neat. You know, it's there is some flexibility. And there's a lot of things go into that flexibility. You made a perfect example of a team like a Denison. You know, if they make the NCAAs, where do they go? Or you know, a team like Cabrini. And I think they have played out of the south bracket in some years and played out of the north bracket, if I'm not mistaken. I think both of the schools have. So it's just a year-to-year thing. It's not a predetermined thing. It is something that, and those are the things that we work really hard on, and we got to figure that out on Sunday.
And I guess, you know, to that end, on Sunday, I mean, about when maybe do you guys try and come together and begin to hammer this out? And I believe the NCAA announced the field at 10 o'clock on Sunday night. Okay. You know, is there a particular time where the NCAA tells you guys, hey, guys, you know, we need a bracket in from you. Is it, you know, 9:30 or 9 o'clock? Or, you know, I guess when do they kind of tell you that there's a cutoff and you know, we need the final bracket of what it is?
Well, they're on the call as well, and they were on the clock, you know, and they let us know. We usually have, we have a committee to prepare ourselves as much as we can. We're preparing with the problem is we got to wait for games to end. We can only do so much beforehand preparation because until we get a score from a conference score from Saturday night, a team is playing. You know that will. That, you know every time a conference game is played, completes and things are a little clearer. You know, and then but you can't guess on all the outcomes of all those games. And that's what makes it exciting as well, you know, because you don't know who's going to win, who's going to have an upset in the conference tournament, who's going to now all of a sudden be thrown into pool C consideration to a team you thought was a lock to win their conference. Well, they didn't win their conference, and now they're in there, and they bumped somebody else out because of maybe they played a strong strength of schedule and are very high in national rank. So it's exciting. It's exciting for us. And you kind of don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, and you don't know, you know, until that carousel finishes. And, again, that carousel may not finish, and there's some games, if I'm not mistaken, that start at 1 or even 2 o'clock on Sunday, so they're not completed to 4. And so there's only so much we can do until we have some of those last pieces. So now it's 4 o'clock, and we got to get that done by, you know, whatever, 9 o'clock, because the call is at 10, you know, the announcement show. So it is, you know, kind of funny. It's like the NFL being on the clock, you know, in the draft, you know, as you get stuff done. But it's plenty of time, and I've never felt that we were hurried, and I never felt we had to rush a decision, and it's done in a timely fashion. And we've been, I think the NCAA's been doing this for a while, and we've been doing it for us. It's my fifth year on there. I've done this for 4 years, and there's time, there's ample enough time for us to do a really thorough and professional job. And I think that's what most people really need to know. I know someone is always disappointed. They thought their team should have made it, or and that goes to the territories. There's obviously a lot of great teams out there, a lot of good lacrosse being played, and so it's always someone's going to be disappointed. But I think I hope if people understand how committed and how hard that people in the committee work, and how part people in the NCAA work, that really know this is done with, you know, as best it possibly can, and as thorough as it possibly can, and as professionally as it possibly can, and even though some disappointments are there, and they sometimes happen, they did not happen haphazardly. They did not happen by a lack of work or lack of focus or lack of by laziness or it's really done. I'm personally really impressed with the process, with the procedure and the process. The NCAA, it's really done well. You know, some, you know, disappointments may, and personal disappointments for a team that you're rooting for, or you think is there. There was a reason why they made it, or a reason why they didn't make it. I mean, and they really go in depth to figure those out. Sometimes they dig really, really deep, but we figure it out.
And Coach, I guess, you know, for you, I mean, maybe it's particularly an exciting but challenging kind of weekend in terms of, you know, as you said, you guys play Goucher in your conference in the Landmark Championship tomorrow, and then, you know, Selection Sunday the next day, I guess. You know, how are you looking forward to balancing kind of all that action over the coming weekend?
Well, I guess I figured it out last year. We were actually in the conference, we won our conference championship last year. As a lower seeded team, so we were not the so we were one of those upsets, and we won. And it was funny that all of a sudden we're in the NCAA, and I got to go that phone call, you know, not that many hours later, and do that. When that does occur, because our team was in as an AQ, there is times that whenever discussing my team, I have if anyone's in that situation to be professional, I mean, you have to exclude yourself. Sometimes you have to get off the phone, and you're not allowed to be in some conversations, because you can never, and rightfully so, they can never have any appearance of any favoritism or anything doing that. So when you're a committee member and your team is in consideration, there's some times that they'll also have a network of having a substitute person in there for you to discuss things, and you have to leave the call, leave the room until things are decided by other groups, so there's never any influence that you can have, and that is done so right as well, you know. So, and I've been in that situation where my team wasn't in consideration, and I could be very objective, and then my team was involved, and then I'm excluded at the right time, so there can be no improprieties at all, and that's again done so professionally well. So I lived it last year. It is exciting, and it makes when I get asked to get back on the phone call, and you know, sometimes I find out who are we playing? that was exciting for me as well, but I had no influence in that at all, and no committee member does. And if you happen to be a team that is involved in the process.
All right, well, Coach, thank you very much for giving me some time today to break down kind of how the tournament shapes up, and best of luck to you guys as you play into your conference championship tomorrow, and then into what sounds like a hectic Sunday, after that.
Well, it is hectic for all the good reasons. We have a great group of people who do this. Rob Randall, our chair, has done a fabulous job and a good leader for us, and Will Hopper from the NCAA office, who runs from that side, and it's a great group of people who are really invested in lacrosse and have great experience, and our charge is to try to have the best championships, the best championships field we possibly can, and trying to, at the end of the day, raise the championship trophy for the best Division III team, and so it's great. And it's just exciting, and it's we enjoy the work and enjoy the pleasure of representing our sports and representing my fellow coaches and our sport in general. It's a great responsibility, but really, really welcome responsibility that we're all really proud of and really enjoy doing.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Coach Moen, and best of luck this weekend.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Bye.
Take care.